Good morning. Good morning. Welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. No matter who you are, no matter the color of your skin, no matter your sexual preference, no matter your sexual identity, no matter where you are on this wonderful journey of life, you are welcome here. If this is one of your first times here, we urge you to come back again because our services can be very different. Some Sunday mornings they are done by me, the consulting minister here at Prairie. Some Sundays they are done by people within the congregation, and occasionally we have outside speakers.
Hello. My name is Holly Tellender. I'm the new director of religious education here. I've met many of you. I haven't met all of you yet, but I'm looking forward to it. Today is my first soup Sunday, and I can tell that I'm going to enjoy it because I can smell that I'm going to enjoy it. But I'm already actually looking forward to our next soup Sunday, which is Sunday, October 19th. And the reason I'm looking forward to that is because on that day, we are going to be participating in the 40th annual Madison Crop Walk. If you've never heard of the Crop Walk before, it's a fundraising effort to raise money to end hunger worldwide and also here in Madison. Some of the money does stay here in Madison. The RE program has kind of decided to spearhead this event, and we are setting a goal of $500. And the preschool class is here today to show you our thermometer. The students will have pledge forms, and they may come and wave them in your face. And we urge you to help us out, not only financially, but also next Sunday on the 19th to walk with us. There's an option for a 1 mile walk and a 3 mile walk. We'll have service and then soup, and then hopefully a lot of us will join the walk. Last year there were 3 families that walk, and we've set a bigger goal this year. So these beautiful little faces would like to see you on Sunday 19th, and they would like you to sign our thermometer when you offer a pledge. And thank you very much for supporting RE. Thank you very much.
You can go either way. This way.
We're gonna march down.
Okay. Thank you.
The opening words then are these. Come, let us worship together. Let us open our minds to the challenge of reason. Open our hearts to the healing of love. Open our lives to the calling of conscience. Open our souls to the comfort of joy. Astonished by the miracle of life, grateful for the gift of companionship, confident in the power of living faith, we are here gathered. Come, let us worship together. We gather this hour as people of faith with joys and sorrows, gifts and needs. We light this beacon of hope, sign of our quest for truth and meaning, in celebration of the life we share together. So the reading that I would like to share with you this morning was written by Universalist Unitarian minister Richard Gilbert, titled Interesting, But Is It Worship? He writes, in a culture where experience is prepackaged, where images flit across electronic screens, where push-button learning and dial an experience are in vogue, worship is a live event. There is no film to be wasted on the cutting room floor, no opportunity to rehearse and rehearse until it is just right. No computers to feed back information. There is only time for singular human beings to meet and touch and love, to share concerns, to celebrate the mystery of being together. There can be no posturing, no pretending here. We bring our naked selves for encounter with ourselves and with the ultimate. We bring our loneliness and our mutuality, our hurt and our heroics, our attempts at sainthood and our failures at humanhood, hoping for some holy transformation that will make us whole again, that will send us from this place with spirit soaring to that holy realm of bliss foretold of old. Worship is living, loving, hurting, healing, questioning, answering together. Worship is a live event. Worship concludes Unitarian, I always get that wrong, Universalist Unitarian minister Richard Gilbert, because he was born and raised Universalist. Worship is living, loving, hurting, healing, questioning, answering together. Worship is a live event. For Gilbert, worship happens right now, in the present. The worship experience, being live, cannot be prepackaged, pre-screened, rehearsed, nor dependent on a computer. Now, Gilbert wrote this in the late 1980s, before we were all tethered to our electronic devices. And this does not mean we shouldn't plan our services. Gilbert is speaking to the need for authenticity and integrity in worship. In other words, authentic worship demands that there be nothing between us and the raw facts of life, the true nature of life. The opposite, I would suggest, of what many religions have taught throughout history. Worship is a live event. There is only time for singular human beings to meet and touch and love, to share concerns, to celebrate the mystery of being together, writes Gilbert. Well, I would add, when experiencing a worshipful moment, there's only time for singular human beings to experience the wonder of the world firsthand. Whether that experience be hiking into Grand Canyon, or walking around the block near your home, or having a meaningful, rich conversation with another person, or reading a poem that seems to be speaking to you directly. Gilbert may be saying that worship can only happen in the company of others. My experience has been that there are many ways in which we, as individuals, experience worshipful moments. Worship requires paying or giving our attention, our whole attention, as much as possible to something that is worthy of our attention. Well, what is worthy of our attention? What does the word worship mean to you? What comes to mind when you hear that word? Bowing your head? Bending your knees? Paying homage to a supernatural being? Think about all the things that people do worship. And I'm not talking about religious objects of worship, but secular ones. What do people find worthy of their attention? Football? Shopping? Drugs? Alcohol? To name a few. We worship these and so many questionable things, don't we? In varying degrees. That is, if we're talking about those things to which we give a lot of our attention. Before I say more about worship, I'll give you a quick review of what I said about language during the two services I did in August. And then after this morning, I'm finished, at least for a while, with my contemplation of words that are often difficult or problematic for Unitarian Universalists to use. I hadn't planned to have these reflections on language turn into a three-part series, but they did. And as I said on one of those other Sundays, this conversation about language will never be over. It's evolving, of course. In that first part, in mid-August, as many of you will recall, I came to what might be considered a startling conclusion for a humanist minister to reach. That is, we are a religious organization. Ooh. The foundation of any faith community, and we are a faith community, is religion. Of course, I'm not using the words religion or religious in the popular sense. I mean something much broader. When I use these words, I am referring to a universal human desire, the human need for connection and for wholeness, wholeness. To illustrate, I used a quote from Unitarian Universalist minister Galen Gingrich, senior minister at the Unitarian Church of All Souls in Manhattan. I obviously am not the only UU minister who has come to these conclusions. Here is that quote. No matter how difficult our circumstances or how dire our situation, we need a way to pull everything together and celebrate wholeness. We need to affirm what is true, cherish what is beautiful, and embrace what is lovely. The necessity of religion emerges from this deep-seated and long-standing human need for connection and wholeness. Gingrich also says, religion is the process of taking everything we know into account to create a life of meaning, everything we know into account as we forge a life of meaning and purpose. This almost borders on mysticism, which is fine with me. I like to tap into the inner mystic whenever I can. Note the absence of any God language here. There is no reference to a supernatural being in this definition of religion. We, as Unitarian Universalists, are in a unique position to do this, to take everything we know into account to create a life of meaning and purpose, because we always have tried to do this in our attempt to make our religion, our faith tradition, current and relevant to the times in which we live. After all, ours is the living tradition, counterintuitive as that may sound. Using these broader, more encompassing definitions of the words religion and religious, I reached another conclusion, not so startling, but one that I think Unitarian Universalists too often overlook. Our belief in the living tradition gives us, or should give us, an edge in attracting other free thinkers who long for community, connection, wholeness, but who are searching for such a place that gives new meaning and definition to such words as religion, faith, worship. We are not going to grow if we are reluctant to use so-called traditional language to explain who we are and what we are all about. In a world where 61% of Americans believe in the virgin birth, compared to only 45% who believe in evolution, we have a lot to offer to people who are searching for a religious home, for a faith tradition that makes sense by defining words rationally, reasonably, broadly. Now, talking about words that we don't want to use can be risky in Unitarian Universalist circles. In our struggle not to alienate anyone, we often don't do a very good job of communicating with those in our congregations whose religious or theological beliefs are different from our own. Becoming comfortable with so-called religious language is one way to do this. After all, as the quote at the top of your order of service says, why not go out on a limb? That's where the fruit is. The fruit in this case is the richness of language, the complexity of words that we too often avoid and ignore. In the second part of my reflections on language in mid-August, I chose four words that I hope we can learn to use comfortably by giving them broader, more meaningful definitions. The four words are these: reverence, religion, religious, faith. I used Unitarian Universalist minister Reverend Kendall Gibbons' definition of reverence. She maintains, and I agree, that reverence is, among other things, our response to nature, our reaction to stories of courageous people who fought for justice, for beauty, for an end to oppression. Those stories that bring a lump to your throat. Whenever you get a lump in your throat or a whisper in your heart, as Gibbons puts it, you are experiencing reverence, which, by the way, must be experienced to be authentic, as opposed to having someone tell you what is reverent. Religion means to bind, as in forming a community. That's all. And one of the best definitions that I have ever seen for the word religious, thanks to the prophetic sisterhood from our history, means possessing a fundamental reverence for life. Simple. I turn to Reverend Gungarich again for help with the word faith. He maintains that faith looks at what is and imagines what might be. A leap of the moral imagination, compelling us to build a bridge from what is past to what is possible. And at its best, faith is a commitment to live with the belief that life is a wondrous mystery, that love is divine, that we are responsible for the well-being of those around us. Well, for me, who's tried to be active in social justice issues all my life, these are fighting words. Words that can sustain us in the difficult, seemingly never-ending work of healing a broken world. So what about this word, worship? Perhaps we should approach it from a slightly different angle. Rather than considering whether or not we are comfortable using the word, maybe we should consider whether or not worship is something we do when we gather on Sundays, ignoring or regardless of our feelings about the actual word, worship. Here are two definitions of worship that are compatible with my beliefs. The first one, from Webster's New Collegiate Dictionary, worship as a noun, extravagant respect or admiration for or devotion to an object of esteem. And then this, worship as a verb, to regard with great, even extravagant respect, honor, or devotion. See, revere. I believe that worship should be a quiet experience. I mean, the outcome should leave us quieted, calmer, more peaceful, because there can be noise, deliberately noisy parts, in a good worship service. Worship, at its best, connects us to everything, to the others in the room, to our Unitarian Universalist sisters and brothers all over the world, to that interdependent web. Worship connects us not only to the silence of the world, but also enables us to hear the still small voice within us, as well as the cries, the prayers, the dreams, the sighs of the world. I can understand why, said my sister, as we sat on a picnic table watching the moon rise, the full moon, over the cliffs at the bottom of Grand Canyon. I can understand why, she said, the ancient people worshiped the moon. my sister, the atheist, or agnostic, or I'm not sure. We don't talk about these things. It's family, you know. I'm pretty sure that she would not fall on her knees to worship much of anything. Yet I knew exactly what she meant. You guys mind? It's distracting. Thank you. All the dreams, all the dares, all the sighs, all the prayers, they are yours, mine, and theirs. Do you hear? Do you hear? And we did. We did. We heard all of the ancient Puebloan people as we watched that moon rise over those cliffs, exactly as those peoples had done thousands of years ago. Worship. Trying to define worship reminds me of what is often said about trying to define pornography. It's pretty hard to define it, but you know it when you see it or experience it. There has to be a certain amount of awe involved for true worship to occur. The kind of awe and wonder I am talking about here is the kind of awe and wonder you find in the very young. Worship for me involves that wow reaction that the very young have to just about everything. Think of 1, 2, and 3-year-olds. Their whole life is one big worship service. Worship as an activity here on Sunday mornings should be both something that we want to do and that we want to do well. Given the fact that we struggle with the word worship, I was somewhat surprised to find that learning how to plan a worship service is a major component of the training we do at our leadership schools. And I found it more than a little amusing that one of my main duties when I was a staff member at one of those leadership schools for a couple of summers, Midwest Leadership School, was to give the keynote address, the opening speech, which was supposed to be about worship. I was told that my presentation on worship was very important and would set the tone for the entire week. We may scoff at the word worship. We may even resist the idea, the concept of worship occurring on Sunday mornings in a Unitarian Universalist setting. Yet here we are, gathered here in the mystery of the hour, gathered here in one strong body. In the very back of our hymnals on page 669, immediately following the metrical index of tunes, there is a section titled Topical Index of Hymns. For some reason that I don't understand, there is no topic with the heading worship. Yet, if you were to turn to page 198 in the hymnal, the big main hymnal, you would find a section of hymns labeled worship, according to the descriptive word at the bottom of the page. In fact, hymns classified as worship can be found from pages 198 through 213, even though they can't be found under the heading worship in the topical index of hymns. Perfect evidence, clear proof of our conflicted attitude about the word worship. We worship in the here and now as a community of like-minded fellow travelers on the journey to find meaning in life, on the quest to understand what being human means. Come and go with me, as we sang in the opening hymn. As a body, we come together to explore the mystery of life, the puzzles, the quandaries, the tensions, the polarities. And we do all this without a script, without a dogma, without a creed, without doctrines. And because of this, the far religious right accuses us of being a false church with false doctrines. Perhaps we should point out to them that they needn't worry about us spreading false doctrines because we don't have any doctrines. Nevertheless, we strive to have joyful, meaningful, bonding Sunday morning services. We don't even need a church building to do this. At another time, I will tell you about the worship services at Midwest Leadership School, and that is indeed what we called them, worship services. where the students are divided into six groups and asked to plan a service, and random drawings determine which group goes which night. You have only 24 hours to prepare. Well, until you get, if you're in the last group, you kind of figure that out. But they were all amazing, and they were all very different. Every service was successful. One of them, well, I said I wasn't going to do this because of time, but I'll just give you a couple examples. The first service, well, the topic was unheard voices, and we were all invited to speak for someone or something that is unable to speak for itself, such as animals, refugees, abused children. The second night was completely different. This service was held outside. We sang "I Seek the Spirit of a Child." We sang "Itsy Bitsy Spider." It was fun. It was lighthearted. It wasn't frivolous. And then there was a Marion Wright Edelman reading. Some of you would be familiar with her and her defense of children work. It worked. They all worked. Each one of them was truly a worship service, but not every single person in every single service felt they'd been to a worship service. Not everyone gets it on Sunday mornings either. And maybe at a wedding or child dedication or memorial service, everyone gets it. And by gets it, I mean experiencing a sense of wonder or joy or sorrow, being in the moment, in the presence of each other, tapping into the mystery of life. The goal of a successful worship service is to have as many people as possible get it. You can't exactly plan for this to happen. There's a certain amount of spontaneity involved, of magic, if you will, or perhaps mystery is a better word. The moment of worship occurs when at least some of the following happens. Cares leave us. We feel a part of something larger than ourselves. We get a glimpse of the incredible interconnectedness and interdependence of everything. We feel joy. We feel gratitude. We feel a sense of community. We experience deep sadness for the state of the world. We experience humility. We are calm. We are peaceful. Notice I mentioned humility. When I wrote the blurb for the September newsletter describing today's service, I said, never would a good Unitarian Universalist seriously kneel down in front of anything or anyone. Rereading that, I thought, where does humility enter into worship then, or into a Sunday morning service? If we are reluctant to kneel down before anything or anyone, and I am very reluctant, how do we express or even recognize humbleness? Are we willing to at least bow our heads before the mysteries and wonders of life? Worship is where the poet and the believer meet in us. And I don't mean the believer in creeds and dogmas. I mean the believer in life, life with all its contradictions, its tragedies, its unanswered and perhaps unanswerable questions. I mean the believer in the journey, the believer who is sometimes filled with awe over the mysteries and delights of this world. I mean the believer who is sometimes filled with agony and despair over the evil and sadness in the world. I mean us, members of a free church, a true church, a church that has remained true to free thinkers, skeptics, cynics, humanists, Christians, Buddhists, atheists, agnostics, pagans, Wiccans, and many, many others for centuries. Our literature is whatever we choose to make it. Our text is everywhere. How fortunate we are to be members of a free church. Our future work is cut out for us. We have to learn how to use words like worship to mean what we know they can mean in the very best sense. We have to gather the courage to stand up for what we believe in. Shout it out. Shout it out there. Be proud of this tradition. We have to be missionaries. Uh-oh, another forbidden word. We have to be proud. We have to celebrate who we are, and we have to cherish this freedom we have, because we live in a world that feels threatened by this kind of freedom and would destroy it. We need to remember We are heirs to a long, strong, defiant tradition. We come together to have meaningful services, whether we define them as worship or not, services that give us the strength we need to do this. By being part of this community, we prepare ourselves to be open to the mystery and awe-inspiring moments of life, and to remember to give thanks to our heritage. So let us worship here on Sunday mornings, yes, but out there in the everyday world as well, by our actions and our commitments to building a loving, caring, just, and free world. It is a living tradition, as I pointed out. I agree, actually, with a great deal of what you're saying. And I would just repeat that I am trying to broaden these definitions, but you're not going to suddenly hear me talking about worship, you know, using that word. And I hope I made the points that if we're going to attract more people, we might want to have a broader spectrum of language. And we'll continue this because we've, not just you and I, but we've talked about starting a group to talk about words and how we use them. So we need to follow through with that. But I think if we're going to be relevant in today's world, we need to somehow have a response to people who are seeking, which for me is saying, well, this is what we think faith is and worship is. But to be continued, and I think, Kent, you were already standing up. The closing words, a poem by Mary Oliver titled Mysteries. Yes, truly we live with mysteries too marvelous to be understood. How grass can be nourishing in the mouths of the lambs. How rivers and stones are forever in allegiance with gravity while we ourselves dream of rising. How two hands touch and the bonds will never be broken. How people come from delight or the scars of damage to the comfort of a poem. Let me keep my distance always from those who think they have the answers. Let me keep company always with those who say, look, and laugh in astonishment and bow their heads. So be it. Go in peace, greet your neighbor, eat soup.